compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Muy buenos dias. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Where did that come from? 888-914-9149.
I was just about to compliment you on how nice and slow you were saying it.
Until I stumbled.
And then you stumble. Oh, well.
I can't blame it on Monday either. It's Thursday.
Maybe tomorrow.
Good morning. Sunday morning. Or Thursday morning is the case. Thursday. You got to play that from. You haven't played that in a while, Cyrus. You don't have to play it now, but.
All right.
Pop it in there. Okay, one more time with the phone number. 888-914-9149. We have some lines open. I'd love to hear from you. A few quick things for your Good to Know file. First of all, it was announced yesterday from the White House that the U.S. government is not going to require you to carry a COVID-19 vaccine passport. We've talked a lot about the speculation swirling around this issue, gosh, for at least 6-8 months now. But here's what we know from Fortune.com reporting on this morning. The U.S. government won't issue so-called vaccine passports. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, I always want to say Psaki, like Lake Winnipesaki, but I think she says Psaki, if I'm not mistaken. She said after Texas sought to limit their development because of privacy concerns. By the way, Idaho has joined Texas and Utah, and I'm going to have to look for the other state, that have just banned the use of vaccine passports. That seems to be a growing trend in the states. So the press secretary for the White House said, the government is not now, nor will we be, supporting a system that requires Americans to carry a credential. She told reporters at the White House day before yesterday, there will be no federal vaccination database and no federal mandate requiring everyone to obtain a single vaccination credential. In a way, I'm going to pause, Cyrus. You're old enough to remember when the first President Bush said, read my lips, no new taxes.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
And then what happened? Lots of new taxes.
Yeah, and they ended up being a one-term president because of that.
Yeah, I think it was probably that very thing. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just having flashbacks. Maybe it's PTSD from so much big government. But when I saw her say that, that's what I thought of. We'll see. The administration wants to protect Americans' privacy, she said. It doesn't want to employ vaccine passports. She said that could be used against people unfairly. I agree. Some businesses and colleges are pushing for people to show proof of vaccination before, for example, boarding a cruise ship, entering a stadium, or returning to campus as a way to safely resume pre-pandemic operations. For instance, Norwegian Cruise Lines Holdings plans to resume cruising from U.S. ports starting July 4th and will require vaccination of guests and crew, the company said. Brown University and Northeastern University this week joined a group of universities that will require students to get a COVID-19 vaccine in order to return to campus in the fall. Vaccine passports are usually conceived of as smartphone apps that would show the holder has been vaccinated against the coronavirus, easing travel and the use of services like restaurants. Gosh, Cyrus, it's almost as though we were talking about these very things for such a long time. And it's taken an interest, you know, the ball has taken a little odd hop here. It's not one that I expected. I thought it would go headlong in this direction. But I'm going to make a, I don't know if I'd call this a prediction, Cyrus, but I'm going to offer a thought in light of all this. Are you ready?
Yeah, definitely.
You might want to jot it down because in case it happens, I want to make sure that we have a record of it. I wonder if they're saying this now, and maybe in good faith. I don't want to assume bad faith, okay? I want to assume good faith all the way around. So let's assume they're saying this in good faith, but we're talking about COVID-19. What if 6 months from now or a year from now, there's some new thing and they say, well, you know, we thought we had this thing beaten and we were saying no vaccine passports back in April and man, have things changed out of the blue. Like COVID-19 came out of the blue last year.
They always stick to what they say. You know, like, remember the flatten the curve?
That's true. I thought that was a diet at first when I first heard them saying that.
It's So we flattened the curve, and then we got back to normal. Isn't that? I'm foggy on.
And wasn't it like, you know, we have 3 weeks to flatten, or 15 days to flatten the curve, otherwise Armageddon takes place?
Mm-hmm.
And we heard that in April, in May. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
I know, I hear what you're saying. So, again, I want to assume good faith, and I do assume good faith on the part of those in the government who are saying that there will be no requirement for a vaccine passport. Hip, hip, hooray, as far as I'm concerned. That's great. I like that. All I'm saying is that it wouldn't take much if some new thing, some new virus popped up and took us by surprise for them to maybe say, you know what, I'm sorry, we have to rethink this, and, you know, we are going to need to have a vaccine passport. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's definitely an avenue. What about the government doesn't have to enforce anything if all of the grocery stores and airlines, if they enforce it for the government, if it becomes a company policy, the government can just step back and like, hey, we're the good guys here.
Yeah, the government say, hey, we're not requiring you to get a vaccine passport,
right.
But if, you know, the airlines are saying you have to have, well, you know, that's them.
That's up to them.
On the other hand, though, I could see a flurry of lawsuits. So if United Airlines or any of the airlines indeed mandate a vaccine passport, and then you've got the government that says you don't have to have one, that would make for an interesting lawsuit or a class action suit. And I wonder which way it would break. But I think, you know, you're onto something, Cyrus. It may be that the government, quote unquote, can keep its hands clean by saying, nope, no need for these passports. But we're not going to get in the way of private businesses who say that you might need to have it to patronize those businesses, which would effectively result in having to have a vaccine passport. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, he issued an order this week forbidding state agencies or any entity receiving public money from requiring vaccine passports. This effort follows a similar ban in Florida. And let's see, also Utah has done the same thing. And this vaccine passport issue is being debated around the world. And I guess it's just a matter of time before everybody gets on the same page or gets off that page. We'll see what happens. 888-914-9149. Also, before we go to the phones, United Airlines, this popped up in the news yesterday, and I think immediately it got people's attention. United Airlines announced an affirmative action plan to make 50% of their pilots women or people of color. Personally, I don't care one way or the other. It doesn't matter to me. As long as you can fly the plane and you're sufficiently experienced and knowledgeable, I don't care what color your skin is. Never have cared. Doesn't matter to me. I don't care if you're a man or a woman. As long as the best people are up there flying the plane that I happen to be in at 35,000 feet, that's all I really care about. But United Airlines is, well, you'll see, here's their tweet. You know, at United tweeted, our flight deck should reflect the diverse group of people on board our planes every day. I'm going to stop there and just say, why? Why must it? Why must that be the case? Who cares? Why must we be so bogged down in people's skin color? Which in a way is a kind of form of racism. Why not just let people be people? Let them, you know, climb to the top of their professional ladder, let them study hard and do well and fly airplanes if that's what they want to do, so be it. And who cares what color their skin is, United Airlines? Why does that have to be any kind of a marker? For that matter, women. I mean, okay, I understand there's the history of the glass ceiling and I, you know, I'm fine with what I was just saying about skin color. I'm fine with that regardless of gender. But see, now, see, here's the problem, Cyrus. They're saying United Airlines announces that they're going to have an affirmative action plan for women and people of color. Okay, United Airlines, define women. That's my next question, Cyrus. How do you define women? Now, no one has asked them that question. I mean, I'm asking it publicly, I guess. But what are they going to say? What will United Airlines say if the question is put to them? Okay, define women in this affirmative action plan that you have, where they want 50%, this is what they're saying. That's why we plan for 50% of the 5,000 pilots we train in the next decade to be women or people of color. Learn more and apply now. And then they give a link to their flight academy. Okay. I mean, great. Let everybody who can do this do it. Let them strive for it, just like anything else. But define women. What does that mean? Does that mean the female of the species? Because if it does, then you're going to have the LGBTQ crowd crawling all over you in fury and righteous indignation. if you should restrict the category of women to, you know, actual women. I mean, this opens the door for all kinds of possibilities. And I'll be honest with you. I don't think United Airlines, if I had to guess, probably thought this through very much before they posted this tweet. I wonder if that tweet will be taken down. Here's some of the reactions that people have. This is courtesy of The Right Scoop, a news aggregator on Twitter. If you're interested, follow them at The Right Scoop. Pilots flying hundreds of passengers at altitudes like 30,000 feet, you would think that they would simply merit this qualification. But according to United Airlines, diversity is now more important. Ryan Gerduski points out that they are doing this after receiving bailout during the pandemic. And this amounts to, in essence, discrimination against white men. Again, as I said, so much of this in the name of tolerance and diversity and anti-racism actually winds up being racist itself. United got a $5 billion bailout last year. This is Ryan Gidersky speaking. They got a $5 billion bailout last year. What's the first thing they did? They laid off or cut the hours of over 15,000 employees. And they're discriminating against white men. This quota-driven diversity push will potentially water down the skill set of pilots. And that's not the message you want to send to customers who are already spending a lot of money to take these trips. One commentator said, if I'm going to risk my life and fly 30,000 feet in the air, I want to know that my pilot was hired because of his or her impeccable skills, not because of the gender or the color of their skin. This is true. Matt Walsh said, commentator, he said, unbelievably, no major airline has ever hired a member of the blind community to pilot one of their aircraft. Will you be the first to break this glass ceiling once and for all, United? Anti-blind bigotry has no place in the airline industry or anywhere else in society. You know, tongue-in-cheek, obviously. So, just be aware, that's all. These things are unfolding all around us. Now, personally, I want to go on the record one more time, just so that nobody misunderstands. I am A-okay with anybody, man or woman, regardless of skin color, doesn't matter to me whatsoever, as long as that person is fully qualified and experienced and well-trained and capable of flying that commercial airliner. That's all. That's the only criterion that I personally have in mind when I care about who's up front flying. And I think it is misguided and ultimately racist, really, when you think about it, for companies like United Airlines to impose this artificial requirement when what really should be happening is what has happened before. The people who are the best and most qualified, men and women, regardless of skin color, they rise to the top. That's how it works. That's how it should work. And that's why things have worked as well as they've worked for so long. And now these social engineers are continuing to tinker with these things. And I think it's stupid. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Kyle, listening in California. Good morning, Kyle.
Morning, Patrick. I have a question about the sacraments. A brief history. My wife and I were talking about the sacraments last night, mm-hmm. and she told me that when she was a baby, she got baptized. When she was 10, she took her first communion, mm-hmm. and at 18, she did confirmation. So I thought that was out of order, and she started to wonder if that makes her sacraments valid or not. Can you explain?
Good question. Well, you'd be happy to know, both of you, that in no way invalidates those sacraments. So the order of reception does not invalidate them, with the exception of baptism must come first. So if the person has not been baptized, then he or she is unable to receive any of the other sacraments. They're ineffective. They're invalid. But once the person has been baptized, then yes, any order of those sacraments. Now, within a certain set of limits, so for example, the church would not permit a man to receive the sacrament of holy orders if he had not yet, in addition to baptism, if he had not yet been confirmed and received the Holy Eucharist. Those sacraments of initiation, which are preparatory, are necessary for the sacrament of holy orders, as an example. But strictly speaking, things like confirmation, the Holy Eucharist, confession, etc., those have a certain prescribed order, but they don't have to come in that order in order for them to be valid. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah. So she has her sacraments of initiation. I'll give you an example. In the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico, Bishop James S. Wall, he is the bishop there. And he, I think it was last year or the year before, I forget which, he instituted in his diocese a return to the traditional order of receiving the sacraments and lowering the age for reception of the sacrament of confirmation, which I think is a very good thing. And he's one of a number of bishops around the country who have done this. So if you were to go to the Diocese of Gallup website, just to do a little looking there, you could find that document, the pastoral letter that he wrote, in which he explains the reasons why, to try to return to a more traditional ordering of the sacraments. I think that's a good thing, personally. Anyway, Kyle, I hope that's helpful to you. Thank you. Let's go to Elaine now in Phoenix. Hi, Elaine.
Good morning.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to add an extra benefit that maybe some people do not know about Divine Mercy Sunday. There is an indulgence that they can gain on that day, as you explained yesterday, but however, also only on Divine Mercy Sunday, in 699 of the diary, it says, the soul that will go to confession and receive Holy Communion shall obtain complete forgiveness of sins and punishment. So once a year, we can be like newly baptized babies.
I love it. Yeah, that's a great reminder. What a great gift the Divine Mercy devotion is to the church. I thank John Paul II for that gift to the church. Well, Elaine, thank you. I appreciate that. Oddly enough, prior to the time of Pope John Paul II, there was opposition in the church against the Divine Mercy devotion, and part of it had to do with a mistranslation of the diary. I guess the person who tried to translate it wasn't as good at Polish as he or she thought. And so a number of the things about it that were mistakenly translated were condemned by the church. So there was a hold put on this. And it wasn't until Pope John Paul II, who, of course, was Polish and fluent in Polish and could read the diary in the original language, he's the one who saw to it that the Divine Mercy revelations were adequately and properly translated, and then he approved them, and then he added this first-class feast day to the calendar of the church, Divine Mercy Sunday. So it's a great backstory and a powerful gift to the church. So I agree with Elaine. We should take advantage of that. Let's go to Patty now, listening in Rogers, Arkansas. Good morning, Patty.
Hi, good morning, Patrick.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you a question for about a year now. It's been weighing on me. I'm a combat veteran, and I am pro-Second Amendment. But the one thing that I've been hearing in my head is when Jesus says to Peter in the garden, to live by the sword is to die by the sword. How do you think that relates to gun rights and using weapons?
Yeah. It's one of those questions that I think there's room to move in either direction. In other words, to move more in the direction of nonviolence and refraining from using firearms in a violent form. We're not talking about hunting, of course. I mean, you know, prior to this last century, maybe a little bit before that, before the rise of mass supermarkets and things, the way people ate was they had to hunt. So having a gun in itself is not necessarily a bad thing. It's interesting to note that Jesus in Luke 22, he says, but now let him who has a purse take it and likewise a bag, and let him who has no sword sell his mantle and buy one. So there we see Jesus actually saying there are some circumstances where having a sword is going to be necessary. Now, that could be theologized or, you know, symbolicized, I guess, because in the context of Scripture, we can see multiple layers of meaning. But, I mean, he literally said that. And then two verses later, they said to him, look, Lord, here are two swords. And he said to them, it is enough. You notice he doesn't say, no swords. I told you no swords. He says in verse 26, buy one. And verse 36, he says, buy one. And in verse 38, where they say, look, here we have two swords, and he says, that's enough. So it is enigmatic. Okay. I would I would grant that this is an enigmatic thing, and we should strive for, as Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, and all those ways in which we should strive for peace and nonviolence. I completely endorse that. But on the other hand, police need guns. They need right. guns, or whatever the next thing is after guns, phasers, or who knows what. But police mm-hmm. and others, people in the military, they need weapons to defend. And so I would say that there's no contradiction between Jesus encouraging us to be nonviolent, but at the same time permitting us to make use of lethal force, whether with a gun or however, when it's necessary for self-defense, or corporately speaking, self-defense of the corporate individual, which would be the public. I don't see a conflict okay. there.
Yeah. Thank you. I greatly appreciate your response.
You're welcome. Patty, if you don't mind, which branch did you serve in and where did you serve? If you don't mind saying, if it's too personal,
no,
then you don't have to
say. I was in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force for 22 years and I've been all over the world.
Wow. And then did you ever have to go into, you probably did if you're a combat veteran.
I did.
Never have to go into a hot spot?
Yes, I deployed 4 times.
Wow. Well, you know what everybody's thinking right now. Patty, thank you for doing what you did, and thank you for serving the country.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Hey, one other question, as long as I've got you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay.
Of course.
I want to figure out a way to get the military vicariate, you know, the military archdiocese, rather, to tell all the service people all around the world, the Catholic ones, about the Relevant Radio app, so that wherever they're serving anywhere in the world, if they want a lifeline mm-hmm. to their Catholic faith, they can get it through the Relevant Radio app. Do you think that would catch on? I mean, do you think Catholic folk in general in the military would glom onto that?
Absolutely. I mean, there's many times I was deployed places where we would have a priest come drop in from a helicopter and stay an hour, but if you didn't know that they were there, you didn't attend Mass for right. 6 months or a year. So there's a big want for it. So I will actually reach out to a couple of my connections and let them know.
Oh, that'd be great. Put them in touch with me if you don't mind. I'm easy to find here at Relevant Radio. Thanks, Patty. God bless you. I'll be right back right after this.
Come fly with me. Let's float down to Peru.
And now it's time for a breakdown.
At the intersection of faith and culture, The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Play it, Cyrus. Play it. Would you consider this song a breakdown?
I guess.
I don't consider this song a breakdown.
I don't know what a breakdown is.
I'm not sure. Who knows? Oh, sad news. We should stop laughing. Seriously, sad news. Jack Hanna, the... what do they call him? Safari Jack, I think is his name. He's been on a million television programs. David Letterman, Good Morning America. He wears the khakis and the Australian bush hat. You know this guy, right?
Yeah, I've seen
People
this
love
guy.
Him.
Yeah.
And he's been a fixture for a long time, a long time. Well, his family announced that Jack Hanna, who's 74 years old, that he has Alzheimer's. And they're saying in the statement, his condition has progressed much faster in the last few months than any of us could have anticipated. Sadly, his daughters say, Dad is no longer able to participate in public life as he used to, where people all over the world watched, learned, and laughed alongside him. Hanna, 74, known as Jungle Jack, I'm sorry, I said Safari Jack, Jungle Jack, was the director of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium in Columbus, Ohio. He remains the director emeritus. He was famous, this according to NBC News, he was famous for bringing animals to TV shows. I mentioned a couple of them, David Letterman, Good Morning America. He first appeared on Good Morning America in 1983 with twin baby gorillas. He also had TV programs of his own, Jack Hanna's Animal Adventures, Jack Hanna's Into the Wild, and Jack Hanna's Animal Adventures. He always appears in khakis. And he is considered the animals, he has considered the animals to be ambassadors. He was hired as the director of the Columbus Zoo in 1978. He retired last year. The zoo has credited him with transforming it from an aging collection of pens and buildings into what it is today. The zoo is often listed as among the best in the U.S. I think for a few years it was rated the very best zoo in the country. And that says a lot. Nancy and I, when we moved to Ohio 24 years ago, we moved from San Diego, where we had lived for years. And we were so proud of the fact that the San Diego Zoo, where we would take the kids all the time, was rated the top zoo in the world, and rightly so. It's just a very impressive zoo. If you've never been there, it's worth going to. And we were doubly happy when, after we moved to Columbus, and of course there was no connection, but after we moved to Columbus some time down the road, then the Columbus Zoo was named the best zoo in the country. So as you can imagine, his wife, his daughters, the whole family are very sad to see their father slipping into the deeper levels of Alzheimer's. His daughters say that because of the COVID-19 pandemic, they were asking for privacy. And they said it was ironic given their father's love of interacting with people. They said in their public statement, "While Dad's health has deteriorated quickly, we can assure you that his great sense of humor continues to shine through. And yes, he still wears his khakis at home." Yeah, so say a prayer for Jack Hanna. He brought a lot of laughter and fun and knowledge to a lot of people. Speaking of knowledge, you'd think about schools being the place for knowledge, and that's where we typically go to get our knowledge, like reading, writing, and arithmetic. This is an add-on to a story I shared with you a couple of months ago about how the San Francisco City School Board had decided to rename 44 different schools because of their ideological biases. And I was surprised, quite frankly, to see this yesterday. The San Francisco Board of Education has unanimously agreed to reverse this decision, which was widely criticized, that decision to rename 44 schools named after historical figures and others linked to racism and other social injustices. The board on Tuesday voted 6-0. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. I think they're right to do this, or at least to put the brakes on it and be a little less hasty about it and a little more thoughtful about it before they willy-nilly begin to rename schools just because they don't like some aspect of the person for whom it's named. I don't mind renaming a school if it's called for. I don't mind that, and I don't object to it. But I think they were hasty in their ideologically driven speed to get this done. So they put the brakes on that 6-0. They voted against it. But the reason is interesting. They want to allow members to revisit the matter after all students have returned to full-time in-person learning. The entire school system remains closed roughly 2 months after the elected board voted to strip some schools of the names of historic figures, including, amazingly, ridiculously, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Revolutionary War hero Paul Revere. So let's pause there for a second. I get the whole thing about George Washington. He owned slaves. He owned them, he sold them, he bought them. You know how you hear the stories about George Washington's false teeth? He did have false teeth, but they weren't made of wood. You know what they were made of? Slaves' teeth. The slaves that he owned, and perhaps even other slaves that he didn't own, when their teeth would fall out, I don't remember reading in his biographies about whether or not he actively sought those teeth before they had fallen out, but he had a pair of dentures, uppers and lowers, that were made from the teeth of slaves. Imagine that. Now, I mean, it's an historical fact. He didn't have wooden teeth. He had dentures made of actual teeth from the slaves that he owned. So I understand. I mean, he's the father of our country. He was a great man. He did many great things. But this is a real blight on his reputation. And of course, we're judging him according to our mores in our cultural dictates in 2021, and that's not fair, ultimately, but that's how it's being done. So, you know, I understand why people would say, why are we honoring a slave owner? I understand that. I'm not fully sympathetic to the idea of maybe renaming a school after him, because he did many marvelous things, many great things. So I guess kind of like you and kind of like me, we're all a mixed bag. And maybe somebody who winds up becoming a saint may have had some dark chapters in his history. That's just human nature, I think. And that shows God's redeeming love for us, that no matter where you've been or what you've done, you can be restored. So in any case, this school system is still closed. The kiddos can't get into the classroom. And Catholic schools, by the way, all around the country have been open for a long time. Everybody's doing great. Kids are doing great. Teachers are doing great. Janitors are doing great. Administrators are doing great. The coaches are doing great. Nobody's falling ill. Nobody's dropping like flies. The kids are learning. Everything's awesome in the Catholic schools. And yet the backward, you know, backward thinking, backward looking San Francisco Board of Education still has its school district entirely closed. And those kids can't go to school. And I don't think the coronavirus is going to be any more aggressive with them than it is with the Catholic school kids who have been happily going to school in a classroom for all these many months. The reversal on the part of the school board was to avoid costly litigation. This is the reason why they did this. It's not because they came to their senses and said, you know what, that is not really necessarily a great idea. And, you know, we were being a bit hasty and we probably should stop and rethink this. That's not why they're doing this. I mean, I'm glad they're doing it, but it's not for the right reason, if you ask me. It's because they don't want to get sued out of existence. They want to avoid litigation. And there's been a huge backlash that has erupted. And especially because the school system is still closed. And they're, you know, what people are saying is, hey, how about if you guys work on a plan instead of renaming schools? I have a better idea. What if you work on a plan to get your schools open and have children in them actually learning something? How about that? Why don't you do that, which you were elected to do in any case, rather than be running wild with your ideological biases and all of this effort to rename a school that's not even open? That's what's going on. That's why this is happening. So I guess right for the wrong reason, maybe would be the way that I would put it. But you take the good with the bad, right? 888-914-9149. Let's go to Matt now in Fresno. Yeah, Matt, welcome.
Hey, Pat, this is Matt.
Hey, Matt, this is Pat. Welcome.
Hey, I had a question. Do Native Americans, will they go to hell for, like, practicing rituals and, you know, stuff like that? Or I'm, like, kind of following along, like, other religions, like, say they, like, practice their life fully good all their life, you know, full righteous, and, you know, then do they still go to hell, too, even if they don't believe in our God? Or do they go to, maybe they die and then they see our God and be like, oh, this is what it is, and then they go to purgatory and then go back to heaven. How does that go?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, and we know a couple things. First of all, we know that Jesus said, no one comes to the Father except through me. I'm sure you remember that passage. So Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So there's no Buddha door, there's no Muhammad door to heaven, there's no Hindu door to heaven, there's no Native American door to heaven, there's no whatever, there's only salvation in Jesus Christ. That much we know because Jesus, who is God, said that emphatically many times. He also said in John 3:16, a passage that I should all know by heart, for God so loved the world that he sent his only son that whoever would believe in him should not perish but have eternal life. So there Jesus says, you know, if you believe in me, you will go to heaven. Now, there's more to it than just that, but that's the beginning of it. Okay. So we know that much for sure, Matt, that this is the norm. Jesus said to the apostles in Matthew 28, verses 19 and 20, the Great Commission, he said, go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, teaching them to observe what I have commanded you, and behold, I'm with you always, even until the end of the age or the end of the world. So the plan that Jesus laid down more than once, but that's the last time he actually uttered those instructions to the apostles before he ascended to the Father, was for all people everywhere at all times to come into his church through the doorway of baptism. Now, obviously, not everybody does that. So then the second question is, well, what about those people who, like you're bringing up a whole group of people, Native Americans, what about all the other people in addition to them around the world who don't come into the Catholic Church? Is it possible for them to go to heaven? Well, we know something else that's true, and this from Scripture in 1 Timothy chapter 2. It says, first of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, petitions, and thanksgivings be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and tranquil life in all dignity and devotion. For this is verse 3, for this is good and pleasing to God our Savior, who wills all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. So here's where I can give you the second part of your answer. What about people, and if you want to look at Native Americans as an example, whether today or perhaps maybe more pointedly, prior to the arrival of missionaries who brought the word of Jesus Christ with them, what about them? They never had an opportunity to know about Jesus in the case of those who lived at a time and a place where there was no opportunity. So it wasn't their fault. They didn't know. They couldn't know. So what about them? Well, we're left with what it says here in Scripture, and this is not the only place that this is enunciated, but it says here, 1 Timothy 2:3 and 4, that God desires all men to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. So if he desires this, it doesn't mean that he commands it, because if God commanded this, then everybody would be saved. It doesn't say he commands it, but rather that he desires it. He wants this for everybody. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, etc. So what this means then, simply put, is that there must be some way that everybody could be saved. Doesn't mean everybody is saved. Doesn't even mean that maybe most people are saved. Jesus said that the road is wide and many travel it that leads to hell, and the gate is narrow and few find it, he says, that leads to eternal life. So in any case, without getting bogged down in how many go to heaven and how many go to hell, the fact is we know with certitude that God desires the salvation of all people. So in the case of people who, through no fault of their own, never knew the message of Jesus, they can't be held liable for that because it would be impossible for them to have known it. So the church says, on the one hand, there's no salvation outside the church, extra ecclesiam nulla salus. That's a defined dogma of the church. That's the norm for everybody. But it's the norm for those who have the opportunity, the ability to come into the church and receive the sacraments. And for those who, through no fault of their own, can't do so, the church says that God, in a way known only to him, can, because he is sovereign, give grace and salvation to anyone whom he wants. So the church has a posture of expectation and hope in God's mercy that he will deal with these people who did not have an opportunity to know in his mercy and kindness, and in some way offer them the chance to make their decision and then receive sanctifying grace. And not you know, in a way that's outside of the church, but in and through the church that they never really knew in any formal sense. And that's the way the church approaches that topic. I hope that's helpful to you, Matt. Thank you. Well, good timing with the music. We're going to take a quick time out, come back with more of your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149. I've got an interesting piece I want to share with you about what somebody is referring to as the cult of COVID. Have you ever heard of that? The cult of COVID? I'll share with you some of those thoughts when we return from this quick time out. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Yesterday, and Cyrus, you may have seen this too, I saw a video that was posted on Twitter of a young woman in an elevator who was just going berserk because the other woman in the elevator wasn't socially distancing, I guess, and I think she was also angry that she wasn't wearing a mask. Did you see this video? This young woman just became absolutely crazed over this and was shouting and jumping up and down. And you didn't see
that
one?
You're too close to me to be socially distant.
Yeah. Well, it was way worse than that. Way, 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 way worse. And it got me to thinking about some of the people that I've encountered who are really, like, I don't know, almost like maybe mentally overwrought on this issue of masks and social distancing, especially when it gets into situations where you've got everybody there is vaccinated, double vaccinated, and yet they're still just they live in fear, and their fear-based reaction to somebody who is either not wearing a mask or not wearing it properly, or You know, it's over the top. Now, this article by Donald Siegel et al., there are a couple of other co-authors, this appeared in the New York Post, the country's oldest newspaper, by the way. It appeared in the New York Post yesterday. And it touches upon this phenomenon that I think is worthy of our consideration, because some people take it too far. It's one thing to be appropriately cautious. I agree with that. But heck, we've even seen this in our parishes, where there's this exaggerated, way over the top, extreme level of precautions that is entirely unnecessary. It's not scientifically based. It just goes so far in that direction that it becomes strange, if you ask me. So that's kind of the perspective that this article is coming at this. They call it the cult of COVID, and it's looking at people for whom COVID-19 and wearing a mask and all of these provisions and precautions have kind of become like a religion for them. Listen to this. For years, we've heard that a growing share of Americans don't identify with any religion. But the past year has witnessed a remarkable religious revival in a nation that was supposed to be fast secularizing. Only the religion in question is grim, hopeless, and more akin to a cult than true faith and decidedly imposed from on high. We're speaking, of course, of the cult of COVID, the fastest growing religion in the United States and across much of the developed world, a religion whose spread has been made possible by alarmingly powerful public health establishment and large corporations. The cult of COVID has its own clerical elite, its own commandments, and even modesty norms. And like any cult, its fanatic adherents shame and silence heretics for defying the public orthodoxy. The faith's first commandment, thou shalt stay locked down. For the first time in history, healthy, asymptomatic people of all ages were quarantined and placed under virtual house arrest for long stretches. It's hard to remember now since they've become part of our lives, but lockdowns and reopenings are an unprecedented imposition on our fundamental rights to work, study, do business, freely associate, and worship God, that is, not the COVID deities, they say. They say it's equally hard to remember, but the COVID clerisy told us, it's a way of saying, you know, the priests of the cult of COVID told us to lock down, that lockdowns would last a few weeks at most until we flatten the curve. We did that months ago, yet the liturgy of lockdowns goes on. Then there's the faith's second commandment, thou shalt wear a mask. So essential is this modesty norm that even those who are fully vaccinated continue to wear surgical masks whose effectiveness is questionable at best. We are told that the vaccines are overwhelmingly effective, yet not effective enough, apparently, to disrupt the liturgy of lockdowns or to obviate the mask requirement. Now, I want to pause here, lest you misunderstand. This is not referring to the Catholic Church and the use of terms like liturgy and commandments and things. It's using common religious terms to describe this phenomenon that is not religious in any Christian sense. But I just want you to make sure that it's not mocking the Catholic Church. Their next commandment, thy children must suffer. Like most barbarous cults, the cult of COVID demands child sacrifice, albeit less overtly bloody than the ancient pagan variety. Pagans practice child sacrifice in order to appease supernatural beings. Likewise, under the cult of COVID, the educational development and physical and mental health of our children have been sacrificed on the altar of absolute safety, one of the cult's most capricious and hard-to-appease deities. Harken back to my comments a few minutes ago about how the Catholic school kids all around the country are in school, in classrooms, doing great. Nobody's dying. Everybody's fine. And as an example, the San Francisco City School District has remained on lockdown, and the schools are empty, and the children are still at home, languishing. And the virus is no different there than it is in Catholic schools right down the street from the public school. You can see the point, right? The next commandment that we just covered, which is the children must suffer. The priestly class of epidemiologists, school officials, and union leaders, the latter are especially important to the cult's hierarchy, are tasked with the carrying out of this liturgy. The media supply the chorus with predictions of imminent doom if children and their parents don't continue to sacrifice their freedom in social and academic development. The children of the poor suffer especially for lack of access to affordable, healthy food. All children pay the price by being deprived of real learning and physical activity. The disregard for kids' well-being may seem callous, but such is the cult of COVID. Even and especially, the president must pay, they say, obeisance to these authorities. Which brings us, they say, to one of the most central teachings, and that is you and your family aren't individuals with rights and liberties. Instead, you are a germ factory whose movements and social interactions must be severely limited. The media lionize the experts who have imprisoned us. Politicians claim to, quote, follow the science, when in reality they are really following the edicts of this cult, which are impervious to reason and evidence. For example, evidence that children transmit the virus at a much lower rate than do adults, or that outdoor transmission is so negligible as to render wearing masks in the open downright ridiculous. If you don't remember choosing to join an irrational cult, well, neither do we. And nor did millions of people across the West who now are called to participate in this bizarre, cruel, and never-ending process. Whatever your religious beliefs, this was one religious revival America didn't need. Now, there is a certain tongue-in-cheek in this, but they do have a grain of truth in what they're saying, because some people do take this too far. And it's odd, to say the least, that for some people it really has become a kind of religion. You've seen this before, Cyrus, haven't you? Have you noticed some mania in some areas where people, they just go way overboard in their precautions?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen good friends from, you know, 15, 20-year-old friends fighting each other because they have a
you
different...
You hang out with 15-year-olds and 20-year-olds?
Friends that, yeah, you...
Oh, you've known them.
I've known and been friends with. Yeah, this actually wasn't me, but it was a one of my good old friends talking about a friend that we were both friends with that they had gotten in an argument because one is very, very much wearing the mask everywhere, no matter what. And he pretty much spent a year isolated, and the other friend is very lax, and so they went head to head.
Are they still friends?
They are, fortunately.
Yep. That's amazing.
Yep.
I've seen some friendships. Well, should I say that personally? I don't know if I'd seen it personally, but I, you know, anecdotally am aware of people who are no longer on good terms because of this issue.
That is a shame.
Yeah.
Yep.
It really is. You know, what boggles my mind is I see people driving alone in their own cars wearing a mask.
That boggled my mind until I left work and I had my mask on as I'm walking through the building. And then I just forgot that it was on. And so 5 minutes later, I'm driving around. I'm like, what am I wearing this for? So then I was like, maybe that's why people are wearing masks.
Okay, let's put a benign explanation on that. It could be the person just forgot.
Just forgot.
But I've seen it enough that either there are a lot of forgetful people or some people really do think they've got to wear the mask in their own car driving to work.
Yeah. What baffles me is when you go to a restaurant, you walk into a restaurant and you have to have the mask on to get in. But as soon as you sit down, you can't catch COVID if you're sitting down.
Yeah.
Or when I went to the airport, they were selling ice cream, so everyone was very socially distant in the airport. But if you had an ice cream cone or a drink, you didn't have to wear your mask because you could be eating. So there'd be people all. I've never seen more people walking around with an ice cream cone. In an airport, but then
even if they didn't like ice cream, just this way. I don't have to
wear a mask. And then once you get into the seat in the airplane, you're shoulder to shoulder with all of these people that were very concerned about standing 2 feet away, and now
you're inches apart
sardined mm-hmm. with these people, and everything's okay.
And you'll notice that people, that you know, you'd see it in the news if it were true, people come and go on airplanes by the millions every day, and nobody's dropping like flies. You know, there is no social distancing to speak of on airplanes. And for those who are sipping their beverages, for example, they're not wearing their masks during that time, and nobody's dying.
Yeah, and these are just observations. Please don't cancel. Don't cancel me.
But,
I'm so scared,
Cyrus, if they can find a way to cancel you, they will. If there's any way that they can use it against you, they will try.
Well, here they come.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. We're just talking common sense. That's all. Thank you, Cyrus. 888-914-9149. We don't have time to go to calls because we covered so much news. I'll tell you what we'll do. When we come back from this, we'll go straight to the phone calls. 888-914-9149 is the number. 888-914-9149. 9149 is the number. A grim ending to the life of a California serial killer who was known as the I-5 Strangler. He got strangled in prison. It's a strange story. The San Jose Mercury News is reporting on it this morning. Amador County District Attorney has filed first-degree murder charges against Jason Boudreaux and is going to seek a sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Boudreaux is accused of strangling Roger Reese Kibbe, whose body was discovered on February 28th in their shared cell at Mule Creek State Prison, southeast of Sacramento. Boudreaux is already serving life without parole for strangling his girlfriend. But because of the costs involved and all of the above, they've decided not to go for the death penalty. Kibbe, 81 years old, was convicted of strangling a 17-year-old girl who had run away from her home in Seattle back in 1991. He himself died of strangulation in prison. I'll be right back.